But tenacity, I mean, not giving up and the being persistent, I think, is the most important skill to develop as a filmmaker, because it will enhance every aspect of what you do.
Today on the show, we are joined with film director Phil Alaco to talk about his new movie that's presented by Lionsgate Films, titled 5 Pounds of Pressure. And what can I say? If you're into crime dramas, this one is for you. Around getting the behind-the-scenes scoop, Phil explains how some of the things in this script is connected to his real life that inspired many moments of this story, and how it can be cathartic turning real life into art. And also share some awesome advice for anybody who's aspiring to be a filmmaker or just trying to bring some big ideas to life. Let's get into it. I ended up watching the movie this morning, and I can't say enough like how much I love it. And like, even just the writing style kind of matches a few of my favorite movies, like a example of like The Departed. And I think it's so cool when you can take all these pieces, and at the beginning, as a viewer, you watch it and you don't know where it's going, but they all start intersecting and intensity growing and stuff like that. And I just kind of want to know, like, where did the story come from? And was it like a challenge to kind of hash it out and make it so tight as it is?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me. And it's so great to meet you, Sean. And thank you for saying you like the film. I love that. I mean, that's, you know, you live to make something that, you know, has the response that you just said. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah.
I love that, you know, a couple of things that you had said are the things that I did work on in the script. I mean, I came up as an editor. So I feel like, even in my writing, I mean, I've always been writing, but I always felt like I wanted to feel the editing even in the script. You know, I wanted to pace it so the first act had this kind of slower feel to it, and then it just kind of picked up in intensity, and the bouncing around gets shorter and shorter and shorter, and as we bounce from different stories, and hopefully bring you on a ride, you know. So some of that I think really came to me from the editing style and was intentional, and carried all the way through. You know, sometimes you do these things in your writing, it doesn't always carry itself all the way through into the filmmaking. You know, there are things you plan or try, and then as you go, it evolves into something else. And that's one of the things that kind of kept that worked, you know, in the blueprint, so to speak, you know. The inspiration, I mean, I wrote this a long time ago. I started writing it, and it was kind of loosely, I guess, inspired by a world that I grew up in that is like this, you know. I knew people like this. I knew that people who lived through things like this. And I think I've always struggled when they're just regular, ordinary people, in when you're living between the cracks of society, struggling together. And, you know, it's not like big monsters come out, or these people who are born criminals or born this. They're regular people struggling mundane, everyday lives like everyone, and then just make those little choices here and there, and get comfortable doing things that are maybe you shouldn't be comfortable doing, you know. But, you know, there are little things that start becoming bigger and bigger and take you into extraordinary circumstances. At least how I've seen it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting too. I find, like, as a viewer, sometimes you're watching a film like this too, and you try to put your mind in, like, if you were in the shoes of that character, what decision would you make? And it just, like, again, like you mentioned, like, these are not monsters, but sometimes that's scarier than monsters, the reality of life and just the most insane decisions imaginable too. And yeah, it's cool to kind of hear you break it down. And you mentioned, like, it took like a long time to write this, which I could see, because it just seemed like I try to think about, like, if I tried to make a story like this, it'd be like so difficult. And I think it's like such a, like, a creative skill to not only like write in this style, but again, it's like at the beginning it's like a scattered puzzle, and then it just all comes together, and yeah, it's just cool. So, like, when it was like finally done, like, what was the feeling you had? Like
you know, relief. Yeah. You know, you sit with something like this for so long, and to finally see it come together, you know, that end, there's a, as you know, the end montage, the way the film ends. I always had that in my head, and I had the song that forever. And I remember going into right after we finished shooting, I went with Owen, who was our assistant editor, and he was had the pieces together, and I was just like, I had to put that together to see it for myself. And it was like a really emotional, cathartic feeling to, after all these years, to kind of finally see it. And for myself, feel like, oh, I think this is going to work. I feel like the plan is going to work. And that was exciting. It was, I have to say, on this film, because of the amazing talent and these actors and the team that we had and the crew and my DP, Sarah, everyone on this film was so committed creatively to it and was having fun. We all had fun doing it. And it, some of the producers, like Aizen Robbins and Steve Carell, they've been working on this for over, almost 15 years trying to get this
Damn.
made. So it's
Yeah,
been a
wow.
long, long journey and a lot of passion and commitment to make it. And I think because of that commitment, I think, I think it shows on in the film. There's a lot
Yeah.
of love went into it.
Yeah, most definitely. And you just answered another question I had too, just about putting in that extra care where it comes to like the actors and crew. 'Cause like you can have an idea like this, but then to execute it and even like have the people play the roles and like having the right just mood and tone and intensity to like all these different characters. I thought you like knocked it out of the park with that. And also I had like a question too about I noticed like Rory Culkin's character and actually the shirt he was wearing, and it kind of connects with like a lot of different people I have on the show. I like talk to a lot of musicians, mainly in the metal world, and he was wearing a Wacken Metal Fest where a lot of my guests actually played on. So I was
Oh,
wondering
really?
if that was just a random thing you guys picked, or was that like just something like connected to you or Rory or something like that?
No, it was, wardrobe had picked it, and then they
Okay.
show it to me, and I'm like, oh, that looks kind of cool. I mean, I was a musician in a previous career before film, and I always thought like the European festivals are cool. I didn't know the specifics about that one. I just thought, oh yeah,
Yeah.
I could see him wearing that, because I felt like a some kind of fest shirt like that fit him better. I didn't want to get too specific with any specific bands to be, because then you start to really, I don't know, get too much information where you might start judging too much about Mike based on it clothing, and there's already a lot there. He's got this crazy hat and this whole thing, but it's cool that you picked that out.
It totally like suited his vibe too, and I guess like a little like Easter egg for people who are like really into like niche metal. Be like, oh, that's crazy, like he's wearing that. And even like for people who are like listening to the audio version of this, I see like all the guitars and behind you and stuff like that too. And it's that's got to be cool, like as a filmmaker, not only like visually, you're probably just like in tune sonically and like music wise and stuff. And do you ever like try to like compose like your own type of score to some of your films, or?
I'm not, I have such a respect for people who score, and we were very lucky to have Felipe, who did our score, and he did an amazing job. The music and writing a song is, in my opinion, is one thing, but being able to capture the emotional essence of a scene and underscore that and have the music communicate that to the audience is like this whole other talent. And when you can kind of dial that in, is a really strong film composer can do and work on that. And at the same time, capture a whole feel that you're going for, I just think is so special. Felipe and I talked about the music before, when I first met him. Dom Burns, one of the producers, introduced me to him. He had worked with him on a previous film that he had directed. And Felipe and I talked, and I was telling him what I was looking for, specifically in these first two montage at the end of the first act and second act, because they were places where the narrative was taken over by the music. It was completely visual driven with no dialogue. The music had to do the talking for those two scenes. And so we talked about what those are, and he created a piece of music called Redemption and Grace. And those are the ones, like right from the start, he nailed it so on the money. I was like, that's it. That is exactly
That's
what we're looking
magic.
for. And those are the exact the demos are, you know, he eventually recorded it and did a beautiful job. But those were, you know, composed already from the beginning. And it was so nice to know we had those already right before the film started.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, it's just like hearing you break down the film too. It sounds like you had such like a special team working with you, and it's super cool. And even earlier you mentioned that with this film, it's kind of like the people are inspired by people you may have crossed paths with in your real life. And do you find it like kind of cathartic taking like some real life situations, whether they're dark or anything, and just kind of putting it into your work and like kind of releasing it as art?
Yeah, you know, it is cathartic, and it's also fun. You know, like there are stories that I've, you know, experienced firsthand, or stories that I've been told that were like, you know, I wasn't there firsthand, you know, but to have them then kind of bubble up through your work organically. You know, you're writing something, and all of a sudden you find yourself writing something very similar to something. You're like, oh yeah, that's that situation. There's a couple of situations that I was directly and, you know, have done and been involved in that I find funny, you know, and it was fun to use that experience and you know, because you kind of write what you know and in a way, and then finding ways for them to come out in your writing that are not, you know, you're not doing something specifically autobiographical, but you are pulling experiences you have. But it's kind of fun. It's fun to find a place for those, you know.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen so many situations where people are get kind of getting stronger with their craft with age as well. Like I noticed like some of like the best comedians, and it's like they're like older, and it's almost like it's just they're gathering all this perspective. And even I'm thinking of a friend right now who's a rapper, and he's in his 40s, but he was like, "Oh, I thought I had to make it when I was like in my 20s." And he's like, "I'm so much better now, you know, it's just because he has something to talk about, basically." And I can see that like going into film, and that's it's cool to hear you break everything down like that.
It's funny you mentioned like stand-up comedians, because when you watch them, it sounds like they're telling stories specifically from their lives, right? And it seems really personal, and we love that, but you know they're crafted, you know they're not real. So I think there's a similarity in that in all writers. You know, there are things that are real, but they're not presented in the way in as true story, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I also noticed like a lot of different creatives, they're gravitating to these segments and kind of listening in. And like just I guess that's like a final question. Would you have any like advice for maybe an aspiring filmmaker or director who's like maybe has all these ideas and wants to bring them to life and bring them to the next level?
I think the best advice I could give myself and give someone else is, you know, to keep going and not give up. Like, tenacity is the most important aspect of any filmmaker or any creative. Because as long as you are working at it, it can keep getting better. This project seemed like it was dead so many times. If I gave up on it, it would have been dead. But because I kept working, new life would come in, new people would come in, a new opportunity might come. And if you're still excited about it, you can keep refining it. And as new people come in, they help you get it better. So sometimes it's fun to just keep working on new things all the time, but there's something also very cool about refining and reworking and perfecting something the best you can. Not that anything is ever perfected, but tenacity, I mean, not giving up and the being persistent, I think, is the most important skill to develop as a filmmaker, because it will enhance every aspect of what you do.
Well said, well said. Yeah, thank you for that too. And thanks for this awesome talk today. I'm a brand new fan. I'm definitely gonna check out like any other films you make in the near future and everything. And hopefully, like down the road, we can have another talk.
Oh, I would love that. That would be great. It's so great talking to you. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Hope you guys enjoyed that quick talk with Phil. What a cool guy. Like I mentioned at the end, I'm definitely a new fan. And just to let you know, as of March 8th, 5 Pounds of Pressure will be in theaters and on digital on demand. So if this is your first time hearing about this movie, definitely check that out. And before we go, we can't run away without thanking all you legends on the Patreon page, who are ever so kind supporting the show. And first up, the biggest thanks to Mike Carniello of the Testing with Mike YouTube channel. If you're into electronics, technology, how they work, and most importantly, how to fix them, check out Testing with Mike on YouTube. Another big thanks to Amanda McKnight of Top 10 Nerd. Beyond being the host of Top 10 Nerd and speaking to millions of subscribers, Amanda has her very own YouTube channel I think you should check out, subscribe to, soak in some good vibes, learn about comics, movies, video games, and all things nerdy. That's Amanda McKnight on YouTube. Another big thanks to the lovely Jenny Potter, the legend Devin McBride, back-to-back double impact Allens, the number one gent Alan Kent, and big wig Alan Briggs. And another thanks to our favorite soul singer Saber, and last but not least, Francis Coffer, aka my mom. If you want a shout out at the end of all these episodes, and also get these episodes early, raw, uncut, right when I'm done the Zoom call, I just post them, you can go to patreon.com/thecreativeimbalance. And beyond having my thanks, you can just go to bed at night and sleep soundly, knowing you're a badass motherfucker who supports raw, uncut, independent media. And nobody can take that away from you. You hear me? With that being said, we got so many episodes around the corner. Appreciate you guys hanging out with me again, and we'll catch you next time. Ciao.